Mission Screen.
Okay.
sleep, I've been on some stuff because I've had it. But I was trying to sort of calm down my sister. She didn't take this to me. I went student. I took that sort of command on her shoulder and tried to tell her I was all right. It was not me that was there. I was standing beside her, and she obviously didn't seem to cotton on at all, the fact that it was me at all. And then she just sat there and proper state she was in. Anyway, and then the doctor, he went, and then they came and they took my body away, you see. Slapped something down like a little sack of potatoes, and I thought, I'm not going after that, I'm going to stay in my home, I might as well sit down in my chair, that's empty. So I sat down there and tried to think it all out. Anyway, my sister by this time, she'd gone off, and I was alone in the house again. And all of a sudden it was just as if the fireplace disappeared, so the way I can put it. And there in where the fireplace was, it was as if the wall had disappeared, and I could see beautiful green fields and trees, and a little sort of, well, I can say it was a river, it was more like a little brook. And I could see something, I personally know what it was, coming up towards me in the distance, and I made it out. It was a figure. It was my mother, dear old dear. She looked almost icy in the picture, which I still got in the room hanging up on the wall. As a matter of fact, my mother, when she was first married, she came right up to what was the fireplace towards me, and she was smiling all over her face, and she was as happy as a sad boy. She says, come on, she says, you don't want to stay here. I said, if you sit in here, no one's going to take any notice of you. May one realize, you know, you have to come and be with me, you see. So I says, well, I don't understand. She says, you know, it's all over now, you mean. You know, you're dead, you see, you don't want to stop here, stuck in that old chair, in this room, she says, well, if I know people you've been living in, you know, she started telling me about the way I let myself go, and well, I suppose I had, you know, over the years, living on my own, my old dog had died some time previous time, and I had my aunt in another one, which I knew jolly well, but I wouldn't live that long enough to see it out, and it wouldn't be fair on the poor animal. And so she says, can you come with me? She says, I've got Meek. So I says, Meek, that was my other dog. She says, Meek, yeah. She says, we've been looking after old Meek for you. So I said, oh, I'd love to see old Meek. Because she says, I said, many years of time I sat here, I said, and wished old Meek had been there. He used to come up to me, you know, and put his head on my knee. As much as they come on, it's time to be with their master. Oh, he was a dear old thing, and my mum companion, my sister, she popped in, and she was good in her way, but, oh, I don't know. Anyway, I never did get it off with her. We always had her at house. I always sometimes wish she wouldn't come. And I suppose she was right in a way. I did let myself go. Anyway, I went with my mother, and it was funny. And going through this, what had been my fireplace, and into this lovely sort of countryside. And then as we was walking, and my mother was, she was nattering away from me, telling me all sorts of things she was, oh goodness me, about my father. I went to her, I said to her, I said, well, I said, how is his father? So she said, oh, I see him. She says, I'm not really, you know, but you know, we were separated. But I thought about that. I knew that never got on too well. She says, well, I see him, but we got together. She says, I live with my own people. That's her mother, you see. That was my grandmother. And also Florrie. Well, Florrie was her favourite sister, who died many years ago. Well, when I was a kid, she says, Florrie and I, she says, we were like, well, peas in the pot, you know, same in every sense, you know. You know how upset I was when she died. I said, oh, I vaguely remember that when you was, I was at your nipper then. She said, oh, well, I'm with Florrie, we get on, and we do hospital work. I says, what? She says, we do hospital work. I said, hospitals? We don't have hospitals. If you're dead, you don't need to go. No aches and pains, and you're dead, you know. We do hospitals. Oh, she says, well, there ain't hospitals in the same way. You know hospitals, but they're necessary for certain types of people who are mentally sort of unsettled, needs guidance and help. She says, it's interesting work and I'm happy doing it. Anyway, she says, I have a lot to do with young people too, because she says, you know, your brother Art, I obviously him, we're very near Art. I said, I don't remember brother Art. She said, oh no, she says, you wouldn't remember, because she said he died in infancy before you was born. Oh, I said, I may remember something about him, but oh yes, she said, he died as a baby when he was grown up. I said, I don't know, that makes sense to me. She said, oh, a lot of things won't make sense to you. She said, until you've been here for a time and then you'll get in the act of understanding. She says, these things don't suddenly come to you, you have to be patient. So I said, well, what about my stuff back home? I said, what's going to happen about that? She said, look, she says, did you start work about that? She says, in many cases, a lot of it. She says, wasn't much good, was it? So I said, no, it might not be good for you. I said, but it's not to me, after all. So she says, look, she says, don't think about those things. And she says, try and get your mind away from it. So I says, well, if I'm going to have a funeral, I ought to be there. She laughed. She says, you always was one for a joke. So I says, well, I'd like to have a look and see what goes on. So she says, oh, well, we don't talk about that now. She says, we'll see. So I said, I'd like to see who turns up. I said, not that there's many that would, I don't suppose, but it's my old pal, Harvey. So she said, oh, forget it, you know, she was nattering away from me. Funny thing is, I say she was nattering. It was as if she was nattering and she wouldn't open the mouth. And there's something dawned on me. I could hear her speaking to me. If she wants to say anything, that is, if she wants to speak in. So I stopped still with her. She's come on. So I says, but I don't understand it. You're speaking to me, and yet your mouth's not moving. It's like a ventriloquist sort of thing. I says, funny, isn't it? So she says, well, you seem to have read her speak by your thoughts. And she says, after all, she says, you're receiving what I'm saying, you're hearing, ain't you? So I says, yes, I says, but you're not actually speaking, at least don't look as if you are. So she says, oh, yeah. And she says, come on. She says, come on, don't think that way. She says, you can understand other things here along, you know. I thought, I don't know, I'm a little puzzled, you know, I was. Then we came to a bridge. Funny about this bridge. And it's a moon going over this bridge, I says to myself. I didn't realise she could hear me, but I said it to myself, but she only could, because I didn't speak out loud. Oh, this bridge, I know this bridge. This is the bridge that there used to be, the little place where we, with old women, never seen them and the kids. She says, that's right. I says, well, that's funny. I says, how's that come over here? I says, if I'm dead, how is it like this? I says, the bridge that I remember, used to be down at the old village where we was. She says, oh well, she says, you understand. She says, over here, she says, we've got a sort of replica, she calls it, of everything practically, you know. And she says, I'm taking you here, she says, because it brings back happy memories and it'll help you. And if you remember the little village and the people and all that, she says. So she says, oh, let's see. So I says, well, how can it be here? I says, it was in Buckinghamshire years ago. She says, 60, 70 years ago. So she says, that's right. She says, but this is the same, but not the same in a way. She says, but it almost looked to you as that place was, and you was a different. So I said, I don't understand this. I'll give it up. You know, I says, well, she says, you will, boy. She says, don't worry. So she says, oh, we're going to Mays. I says, oh, she says, Mays. Oh, she says, yes. I said, well, she died years ago. She says, of course, she just so did I. Have you forgotten? So I said, well, no, and I was all saying, you know what I was saying up and down, come ago. We're going to see May. Yeah. That makes sense. She says, nothing will make sense to you at first. She says, until you begin to learn a bit. But May was always happy at the village. She always liked the little cottage that she had. You know that little cottage she had? The end of the row. I said, oh, I remember that. So she says, oh, well, you'll see for yourself. And it was just as if I was walking back into the past. There was that same little house, one of four it was on the end. A little tiny low brick wall in the front, a little garden that my uncle used to take such pride in, you know. Oh, it was nice. All the hollyhocks and the flowers, everything as he always liked it. And there he was, Henry Arndt, standing in the door. turn behind and never look back again, because I swam on in pool of sea-kids. Anyway, there he was, but all he did look different. He was always a tall man, but he got very old, bent. There he was, tall and straight as an arrow, and young and fresh looking, and all he did look wonderful well. So did she, and there they were, all they made such a fuss of me, and took me inside and sat me down, and then it was spick and span and clean and fresh, and it was just like as if it was on a summer's day, and then it suddenly reminded me, I thought, well, I don't know, and from the heat of a summer's day, and yet it's like a summer's day, and I don't see no sun, and yet there's this lovely light, and I made some talk about it, and they said, oh, well, he says, of course, we don't have excesses of heat or cold, and it's always mild and pleasant, and the light is always, you know, very nice. So they said, would you have a cup of tea? Because they just about floored me. I said, don't you come that loud. I said, pumpkin, they start telling me you can start me the pots of tea. I said, oh, and she laughed. She said, look, you understand. She said, your mother's no doubt tried to tell you that when you first come here, everything's made very much the same. So you'll be happy and familiar. And if you want something like that, you can have it. Realise those things aren't necessary, but if you'd like a cup of tea, I see six evenings and have a cup of tea. So I says, well, I've never had any tea, you know, so I never thought it was possible to have tea when you were dead. So she said, well, I'm not going to argue with you, I couldn't get it. So she went out the back, pulled in this bottle of tea, and the funny thing, now I had to laugh when I think about it. It was the same teapot that I always remember, an old brown thing she had for years on the spare brown. And then she got this same old cover on it, and she was always a fucked old one she knitted herself years ago. Funny I should remember that teapot, because so many other things that one ought to remember, I suppose, but somehow that teapot always stuck in my mind, and that dolly thing she had on top was like a child's head, you know, with a rat on it, it's the same. So I laughed. I said, don't tell me you got that, you didn't bring that over, you know, when you begged her. She said, no, she says, but I was just as surprised as you were to find it was here. She says, it would be anything that really means a lot to you. If it's worth having, if it's important to you, you can have it. At least while you think about it, and if you stop thinking about it and stop thinking it's necessary, then it no longer exists for you. But it only exists today because you've come. And because you're thinking of the past, and us thinking of the past, when you used to come sometimes to see us, and we used to make a cup of tea, and then that tray, that old tin tray, and then pictures and flowers on, then it was just the same. I said, but then, you may say you've got all this stuff. So she said, only while we think about it, and since you were coming, we thought about it, and thought it'd make you comfortable, and feel at home, so we got it. But as soon as we stop thinking it's important, we don't need it anymore. So I said, I don't know, I just don't get this at all. So I think after a while, they said, we should go for a walk. I said, all right, where should we go? So she said, and my uncle says, well, we're going to see old Mabel. Now this made me laugh, because old Mabel was, well, they used to say she was nuts, you know, she was all there. She was about the finish, she was. I said, don't tell me she's here as well. So I said, she's still as daft. He said, you shouldn't say that. Funny thing is, she was the most sensible one of the finish. I said, don't get away. I said, it won't be. She was a big mouth with me. So he says, you come to see for yourself. So we went out and we went to see this woman in a Mabel. Oh, she was a tasty one.
Come on, friend.
Well, she lived happily for years, you know, all on her own. Her mother died many years before. And then everyone made a bit of a butterball. You know, she was a bit rough then. And she had a funny sort of attitude of mind about religion she had. She used to go to church religious. But you know, the funny thing about it is that although they couldn't stop her going to church naturally, and indeed the old parson there, he was a nice old chap, you know, but he understood. But old Mabel, she used to make herself a bit of a nuisance in that church, and she was always, you never knew what she was going to get up to. And on one occasion when the parson was in the pulpit, she suddenly stood up, you know, shouted out, I can see him, she says, I can see him. of course, all you can imagine what it was like, the congregation and all that. So I didn't know quite what happened. I heard this mother, he was always laughing. Evidently, she used to see things, you know. And evidently, she saw some body standing behind the pastor in the pulpit, and it was the clergyman that was there before him. And of course, they got her out, you know, hopefully, and pacified her. And she says, oh, I saw him. I saw him, she says. He was standing behind the pastor in the pulpit, and he was telling them what to say. Well, of course, we all thought she was nuts, you know. I mean, it was a joke in the village. As a matter of fact, she used to do a lot of that church, do a lot of the cleaning and the polishing and the brass and all that on. But anyway, I remember a while ago when she'd keep the budget, you know, because she got a bit much from, you know, she was always seeing things and telling people things. And many of the things she told people happened too, because I remember she told them, well, my mother says that she told them that there was going to be a very bad fire at the manor house. Well, actually, a few days later, there was. Half of that was burnt down and the ropes and all the rest of it. Anyway, I think they must have been glad because they thought she was a bit of a witch, I think. Anyway, she welcomed me, and there she was, looking younger than I remember. But as bright as a button, she was happy, and she was talking away there. She said, you know, funny thing was, an old parson, he was another bad old stick, you know, he used to stand up there and spout, but he hadn't got a clue what he was talking about. She said, I used to sit there sometimes and see the previous pastor standing there, and I used to see people that I'd known when I was a girl in the village, sitting in the pews and walking up and down sometimes. And she says, once I sat there, she said, and nobody seemed to realise it only me, but there was a woman came in and she went up to the altar and she knelt down and she put some big bunch of flowers on the altar. She says, I knew her, she'd been there for donkey years, because no one else saw nothing. She says, I was always like that, you know. They all thought I was mad, she says. There they were preaching and telling the people about things. I was the only one that had any sense, and you can't think about it. Well, I was mad, you see. See, this goes to show, doesn't it? I says, well, I don't know. And all I see are things, and all I get bewildered, I says. So she says, oh, you don't want to worry. She says, they tell you all sorts of things down there, she says. But none of them know much about it. And those who are supposed to know most know least. And they're scared stiff in any case. In fact, they're also scared of the devil, that they're afraid to do anything or find out anything in case they get involved in some way. And she said, the devil, she said, they don't even know what they're talking about. There ain't no such person as the devil, that's good and bad. She says, no, I always knew that, and I didn't need that person to tell me. I said, I always knew there were spirits, because I've seen many of them, she says. And I knew there was good spirits, and the spirits is not so good, she says, big mischievous type. We used to have a child, but really, she says, she was a mischievous little thing, she was. And she got mad, she probably won't remember all about it. So she says she's hopefully a bit, she's a nice little thing, she's grown up too. She says, as a matter of fact, I often see her, so I said, well, I remember something about that. All the things I listened to and the things I experienced one way or another, it was marvellous with the other thing about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And all this time, you know, there was my sister on her, bawling her eyes out, crocodile tears, really, I mean, she hadn't got much time for me, really. She just felt it was her duty. The funny thing that people do things because they think it's their duty, they shouldn't do it. But then all the time they're cussing and swearing about it and saying, oh, the bell, do this and do that. You know, it's funny about people. My sister, she was a bad sort, and she got a bit fed up on my mind. She had a basin for rubbles and that. She had a sort of a husband. Anyway, I thought, well, what about this funeral? I suppose it ought to be there. Since I'm dead, I should put in an appearance. She said, well, my mother, she bows. She says, oh, well. What do you want to get down there? You finish with that, because she wasn't going to see no funerals. So I said, I don't know, it sounds crazy, but I'd like to see me own funeral. Oh, she said, if that's what you want to do, she said, we'll go with you. So, anyway, she said, in the meantime, she should sure have a rest. So she said, she's going to get a bed. I said, oh, bed? Do you need a bed here then? She says, well, she says, it's not necessary, but in your case, it might be a good thing. So, anyway, cut long story short, went to bed. Next thing I knew, when I woke up, I was standing in the local cemetery. And the horses what annoyed me, I tell you, it really did annoy me, because I kept up my insurance and all the rest of it. There it was, being put down in the grave. And it was a pauper's grave. Now, this really upset me something dreadful, because I'd made sure that there was enough money to have me decently buried. That's one reason why I suppose I wanted to go to see my own funeral. There was my sister. and two other people. Well, I recognised her when I didn't. Well, it was an old chap I used to know, or we'd been to school together. Anyway, and there was I, being put down there. Rain was coming down, and I realised that the old parson was hurrying through the services if he got a train to catch. And I thought, well, I don't know. And I realised that she hadn't bothered to buy a bit of rain, you know. She just plopped me down there, cheapest funeral she can give me. In a way, it didn't matter, but it was a principle of the thing. Because I kept up my policies and that, and I had quite a little nice sum, you know. And she did that on me. I thought, well, you wait, you bitch. I said to myself, you come over here, I'll give you what for. Thanks for doing that on me, you know. Anyway, mother says, look, by the time she comes, you'll think different. After all, what a waste of money. She said, now look, she says, what does it matter where you're buried? It's where you are that matters, not where you're buried. And that little bit of money will tide her over and help her. I know, she says, the principle's wrong. I says, you didn't mean principle's wrong. She said, I she knew as I was doing this, that I'd have a decent funeral. So she said, what does it matter whether you have a decent funeral or not? Or whether that man stands over you and gaggles in the service like an express train. I said, what does it matter? She says, it makes no odds. You're here, aren't you? And you're all right, ain't you? I said, she's come here and I'm all right. So she says, well then, stop worrying about it. After all, when they come here, whether it's the parson or his sister, they'll face up to life, they'll face up to the truth. They'll look back and have regrets. But they can't altogether blame them. They're both ignorant. His sister's ignorant, she's my daughter. But she's as ignorant as they come, she says, in some ways. But she learned, so the parson learned. He'll learn that, now, it ain't the body in the grave that matters, and the service, and the getting it over as quick as possible, and drawing your 7 or 6 or whatever it is in you. It's what you are inside, what you've been yourself. Not what you pretend to be, or what you think you ought to be, or are, or what you believe, or what you don't believe. It's what you really are yourself, okay? She says, and that's all that matters. Looking back, she said, now on your life, you didn't ever did no one no real harm, and your intentions are good. You weren't exactly an educated bloke, she says. You weren't exactly a church-going fella, but you weren't a bad bloke, and you did your best. And that's all that really matters, that you strive to do your best. She says, you'll learn, boy. She says, you'll learn. Anyway, sometime perhaps I'll be able to tell you more about it. Can't stay no longer.
Can you give us your name, friend,
please? Can you give us the place you live in Buckinghamshire?
Well,
you give us a second.
Come to the